I'd also like to thank our co-sponsors who were so helpful in when the visa campaign happened, and so helpful in helping to promote and build this meeting. And there's so many of them, so bear with me. But it's wonderful that all of these organizations helped to put this meeting together. The American Friends Service Committee of Chicago, the Committee for Just Peace in Palestine and Israel, the Episcopal Diocese of Chicago Peace and Justice Committee, the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, the International Socialist Organization, the International Solidarity Movement in Chicago, the Islamic Medical Association of Northwestern University, Jewish Voices for Peace, the Middle East Task Force of Chicago Presbytery, the National Lawyers Guild at Loyola, Neighbors for Peace, Students for Justice in Palestine at DePaul, Students for Justice in Palestine at UIC, and Jewish Fast for Gaza. I'd like to thank the Newberry Library for donating this space tonight, and to all the many individuals who are not affiliated with organizations but who volunteered their time and energy to make it all happen. Finally, I want to let everyone know that David Barsamian will be rebroadcasting this event for Alternative Radio, and Haymarket Books will be discounting the book that he put, that David Barsamian and Edward Said's book, The Pen and the Sword, tonight for $12 will be on sale at the table. So I'm going to introduce the way that the meeting's going to work. I'm going to introduce both of our speakers. They will have their conversation, and in as part of their conversation, they'll be taking questions from the audience, and I'll sort of walk around with the mic. We need the questions to be on the mic so that it can be part of the broadcast. So I'll do the introductions, and then I will let our speakers take over. So first, Mohammed Omer was born and raised in the Rafah refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. He maintains the website Rafah Today and is a correspondent for the Washington Report for Middle East Affairs. His writing has also appeared in The Independent, IPS News Agency, Morgan Bladwit Norway, DN in Sweden, and Young World in Germany. In 2008, Mohammed was the youngest recipient of the prestigious Martha Gellhorn Prize for Journalism for his reporting from the Gaza Strip. Upon attempting to return to Gaza from accepting his award in London, he was detained, interrogated, and beaten by the Israeli security forces. He was hospitalized, and since that time, he's resided in the Netherlands, where he's continued his work. Ali Abu Nima is the founder of the indispensable website electronicintifada.net. He is a writer and commentator on Middle East and Arab American affairs and a full-time researcher in social policy at the University of Chicago. He writes for numerous publications, is a regular radio and TV commentator, and the author of One Country, A Bold Proposal to End the Israeli-Palestinian Impasse, which is also on sale, and he'll be signing copies of it after the meeting. So without further ado, I will pass the meeting along to them. Thank you very much.
Yes, good evening, everyone. That's better, right? That's painful. And I'm putting my phone in airplane mode. I just tweeted a picture of you all here. I encourage everyone else to come and hear Muhammad when he goes to Houston and Santa Fe. It's really wonderful to officially welcome Muhammad to Chicago. You heard the story of how he almost didn't make it, but many of you in the room helped make it happen, and we're really thrilled about that. And because I know we want to hear from Muhammad, I'm just going to get right into some of the into the discussion with Muhammad, and we'll have people join in as we go along. I was talking to Muhammad yesterday. You heard that he was born and raised in Rafah, and we'll talk about Rafah in a minute, but I asked him the question that Palestinians always ask each other, well, where are you originally from? And he told me that he's from the village of Yibna, which is roughly in this area, correct? Which is now the Israeli city of Ashkelon, the Palestinian city of Al-Majda Al-Asqalan in that area. And your family were made refugees in 1948 and they went to Gaza, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So if we focus in on Gaza, you see back on this picture, Gaza is down, I hope I'm not blocking it, down in the corner here. And we focus in, this is the Gaza Strip. And Gaza is about, if you think of this in Chicago terms, it's about the distance from, I would say, Hyde Park to Evanston, top to bottom. And there is a Lakeshore Drive in Gaza, but it's not as, it's not paved as well, right? So if you were to drive from Gaza City up in the north down to Rafah in the south where you live, how long would it take?
Well, it could take, it depends, before 2005 or after 2005.
Well, what's the difference?
The difference between before 2005, the Israeli disengagement from the Gaza Strip, it used to take, it can take 2 hours, 3 hours. In my case, it took 3 weeks at once. Yes, Abu Holi checkpoint is known or was known for blocking the road and not allowing Palestinians to go and to get in and out. I remember one of these days when I was coming back from the last exam, and by the way, the soldiers know very well, they have the schedule of what exams we have in the university. And it was just, we were going back home because we have about 4 weeks kind of holiday, and they shut the checkpoint completely where we had to wait there for 3 weeks. Well, for now, it is pretty much easy. As we will go along in this presentation, you will see that it will take 1 hour to get from the south, that is Rafah refugee camp, where I'm living, to the north, Gaza City. That would take 1 hour if the situation is fine and if the bridges are running. There was a period of time, especially in 2006, during the war in Lebanon, where Israel have attacked the bridges that connect the south and the north of the Gaza Strip, making it difficult to move between the cities.
Okay, let's focus in again and on this area, Rafah, which is where you are from, where you live. And this is a real close-in of Rafah, and this is the Egyptian side, this is the border. And where do you live on this map?
I live in an area called the Block O area, just right this block, yeah. This is the southern part of the Gaza Strip, and to be more specific, this is one of the worst areas that got the hit during the last few years. Most of houses have been completely demolished, nothing is left behind. We are literally on the border with Egypt. Before our house had been demolished, I could see the Israeli soldiers between the Egyptian line and the Gaza side. So we are right close to a station called Salah al-Din Station, which is a military base which Israel took after the Camp David agreement.
Now, I heard that Gaza is very beautiful. I actually tried to go on vacation in Gaza last December with the Gaza Freedom March, but we didn't get in. And I heard that Gaza has beautiful sun, sea, and sand. And these are some of the pictures you took. This is Gaza City Harbor. And this really made me yearn for summer in Chicago because it's been a long winter. And these are some of Muhammad's images that he showed me that I thought you should really see of Gaza. And just the pretty, ordinary life that people try to live. And this is, you told me the name of the street, but I forgot.
This is an area, it's known as Al-Saha. This is basically the main street and the most famous in Gaza City. It's the center of the Gaza Strip, this street.
I'm also conscious that many of you are missing a basketball game this evening to be here. So I thought instead you might enjoy the Gaza cheerleaders that Mohammed photographed. And some of these images really struck me because we never really see them in our media. And this one, Mohammed, can you say more about what this looks like? An ordinary scene, looks like us right here, but tells more of a story.
Well, this photo is in the Palestinian Legislative Council. The man who is right in the middle is Father Manuel Musalla. He is the head of the Holy Family School in the Gaza Strip, where Christians and Muslims are studying together. On his right side is a member of parliament and minister of culture in the Hamas government, Dr. Atallah Abu Sibah. That photo illustrated in that day that Father Manuel, I asked him, there are some media in the US that says Christians are oppressed in Gaza. Is that something that you can confirm? He was totally rejecting this idea, and he said to me, this is completely wrong, and this is what exactly the Zionist media is trying to show. We are living perfectly fine with our brothers. We are all Palestinians, Muslims, and the Christians in the Gaza Strip.
And this is another picture that tells a similar story. What do we see?
Well, I went, I immediately after I took this photo of him, I said, well, I want to visit you in this school and to see how there is the coexistence between Christian and Muslim students inside the school. So I went, she's Christian from Gaza, he's Muslim, the boy is over there is a Christian, and it's the whole school basically is based on a collection of students from different parts of the Gaza Strip who are joined in one of the private schools. This is not one of the main schools, but it's a private school with a few thousand students.
One of the things that I learned is that Gaza has actually one of the oldest Christian communities in the world. And in this Holy Week, of course, they, like Palestinians all over the country, have been unable to celebrate Easter because of the travel ban that prevents Palestinians from reaching Jerusalem. So that affects Christians in Gaza as it does in other parts of the country. Now for a change of pace.
Well, this photo, it's funny, actually, the story behind this photo. The story, those guys, Abu Hasira, Muhammad, and Muhammad Ahmed Jayad, both of them are from a refugee camp called Al-Shatir refugee camp, one of the most crowded areas in the Gaza Strip. It's one of the most, it's the poorest camp in the Strip. At one time, I gathered that they would love to go surfing because they are living literally a couple of minutes from the shore of the Gaza Strip, and they wanted to go surfing. I tried to get to some organizations. They don't have surfing boards. So when we said, who's going to get you the surfing boards? I tried to get the story into some media. I called a journalist in Jerusalem, and I said to her, well, this is the story. Those guys would love to go surfing, but they don't have surfing boards because Israel is not allowing surfing boards into the Gaza Strip. So a gentleman from California, I think he must be now 80 years old, American Jewish, he was very moved. Dr. Baskowitz, his name, you can search him. He was very moved by the fact that there are some kids in Gaza who would like to go surfing. He has a surfing school. And he said, I cannot tolerate the idea. There is somebody who loves surfing and doesn't have surfing boards. So I am coming all the way from California to Gaza with 17 serving boards. The old man was carrying these serving boards with two different men, and then he got to the Erez crossing. Of course, he's well-known and well-respected. When you Google this man, you find him that he wrote several books on health and serving. And then he got into the Israeli crossing of Erez, the northern part of the Gaza Strip, telling one of the Israeli soldiers, I want to get the serving boards into Gaza, to those who don't have serving boards. And then a journalist, a friend of mine, he said, this man, people have no food and he's coming with serving boards. And then what I said, how did you manage then? The soldier said to him, wait, no, you are not allowed to get into Gaza Strip. It's not possible for you to get in. Well, he wasn't allowed. And then I asked him, what did he do? He looked at me and then he said, I insisted, and then they make like a kind of barrier and say to me, hey, you are not allowed to move inside the Gaza Strip to bring these serving boards. This is the last stop here. You cannot go to bring them. And they are just 5 minutes walk from the guys, Ahmed and Muhammad. Both of them are just 5 minutes walking distance. So I was like, kind of, okay. Can't the Israelis get the boys to him if he cannot go to them? Then I say, no, it's impossible. And then the gentleman, the old man, just take one of the soldiers and he start kissing him. And the man started to shout and say, I'm a soldier, don't kiss me, don't kiss me. And then he said to him, well, I'm kissing you because we want peace. We want people to serve together. I said to him, okay, if that's a story like this, we will bring the two boys to come and take the serving boards. And there are the boys serving, and they want to start a serving board school in the Gaza Strip.
Did you try surfing?
I didn't try, to be honest. Frankly speaking,
I wouldn't try it myself, but I'm glad that...
I never tried because, to be honest, I never learned how to swim in Gaza. And this is something to do... I only started to swim as part of my medical treatment in the Netherlands. And that was very embarrassing because you have to put you with those kids like this and then learn swimming. But I managed. Why we couldn't swim in Gaza? It's basically because before the 2005, the beach was only for Jewish settlers. One of my brothers, Esau, who is 1 year younger than me, he's 24 now, he always managed to find a way to sneak into the settlements, the Jewish settlements, and get to swim. But in the way back, he gets some slaps on his face from the soldiers. He come to my mother crying that, hey, What happened? He said, well, they caught me in the middle. And then how did you manage to get in? This area of the shores between inside, there are Palestinians, few hundreds of families who are living inside, and there is a checkpoint. You are not allowed to get inside as a checkpoint. But there are some trucks that get inside because this is agricultural area, and they bring a lot of trees from outside in between. So he go in the back of the truck between the trees and hide. In the way back, the cars or the vans, when they come, they are empty. So there is nowhere to hide. So they catch him on the way back after he swim. But he said, well, it's worth it. I managed to swim.
Yeah. Well, in this country, you have a history of segregated beaches. And so it's very similar. I think most people in this country don't know that until 2005, you had Jewish-only beaches in the Gaza Strip. And there were 8,000 settlers in Gaza who basically reserved most of the coastline for themselves.
Mostly the south, yeah. and the north as well.
Yeah, and almost a million and a half people of Gaza had no free access to the sea. Okay, it's just a beautiful picture. And this really struck me. What is this, Muhammad?
This is a mass wedding.
Oh, you know what? We have more pictures of this later. Let's go on, because we're going to come back to the mass wedding.
Well, there's a story behind that as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I want you to tell it. We'll come back.
All right.
This I like. This was an election election float. I guess they have to use things for dual purposes in Gaza. So this boat is serving as an election float. And this was in the 2006 election?
This actually in the presidential election when Mahmoud Abbas was elected in 2005, January.
I wanted to ask you, Mohammed, you, we heard in the introduction, you, and we know those of you, those of us who followed your work, your journalism, you write and you take pictures, and you've really distinguished yourself. Here in Chicago, there are there's a very prestigious school of journalism, the Medill School of Journalism, and there are others in the country. And I'm wondering, did you go to a school of journalism in Gaza?
In fact, I never studied journalism.
So how did you get started?
Frankly speaking, it was never my dream to become a journalist. Mm-hmm. And I'm not complaining here. I always wanted to be international translator working for the International Red Cross or the United Nations. But life forced me to be a journalist. I lived in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. This is Block J area. What makes you really as a human being feel the tragedy of human beings is when you are, if you give me the marker.
Yeah, the red one.
Is when you are just in this area of the Gaza Strip and see injustice. Few minutes after this photo was taken, we left the area. There was one of the drivers with us from Associated Press. We left the area and then we are heading to somewhere else. I saw something, one of the children. This area is full of tanks and bulldozers here. One of the children, he was trying to sneak in and to see if the bulldozers are still there because they want to bring the ruins of what is left under their houses. The child stopped here, trying to look with one eye to see if he can manage to catch something or to see if the Israeli bulldozers left the area or not. He was immediately shot in the head, taken on the spot, and you can see how the bullet here and here, but here the bullet. Just one bullet, one shot. We just saw parts of his head scattered on the road, and it was very difficult to collect these parts and to take them into Abu Yusuf and Najjar Hospital in Gaza. Well, back to your question, this is something that motivated me to be a journalist. Seeing the destruction of houses in an area where I used to live, this is Block J area. Maybe it's more fancy than the area where I'm living, and even though it has lots of destruction. At one point, I see houses demolished on a daily basis. What are we going to do? Those who are living in the neighborhood next to us, they have no clue what is happening. We tell them Israeli F-16s and missiles are bombing the houses right now, and bulldozers are demolishing houses over the heads of people. Nobody believed this story. The people who are living in the neighborhood next to us, they have no clue. They don't believe it. They just say, I don't believe it. I go to the kids in the school, we talk about it, and say, is this really true? I say, yes. At one of the occasions here, I decided that I wanted to call the press news agencies, and none of them is based in Gaza Strip. Most of them are based in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Cairo, Amman, Damascus, or somewhere else in Europe. Very little of those who are based in Gaza City. I call them and say, well, this is what's happening. None of them made it. For many weeks, I see destruction of houses. Still, those who are inside the classroom with me, they don't believe it. And I say, if those people don't believe it in the neighborhood, what about those who are in Khan Yunis, or in Gaza City, or in Jabalia, or in the West Bank, or in Jerusalem? What about the other Arab countries around us? Do they really know what's happening? No. What about the world? Since that moment, I met with a lady called, her name is Biv Valerie. She's American. I met her through a program called the Global Exchange. The lady, I sent her one email. The email was entitled, "They are bombing us, they are shelling us." I sent the email, and she sent it to her friends. Her friends sent it to friends. It ended up with hundreds of emails that I'm getting. Most of them, "I feel ashamed to be American. This is shocking what is happening. This is as a result of our tax payments." So I got quite tired afterwards from all this media and a lot of those who are writing to me. So I have started a blog where I put the information, and from there I started to put the information with photos to document everything. I had no camera at that time. I was not trained whatsoever to use camera. I had to run when I saw Israeli bulldozer demolishing the house next to us. It's a lady, an old lady called Am Ashraf. She just died some months ago. She's working as a midwife for the United Nations. The lady, she said to me, "I am going to resist. My house is not going to be demolished. I'm not going to allow them to do that," she says. And I said, "How come?" And then she's coming with a flag of the United Nations. She got it from a long age. And she said to me, "I'm going to put this flag on the top of the house. It's going to be protected." To be honest, I thought she's going to be protected. But then I got back. I went to first to one of the places. I have no camera. One of these places is a studio that makes photos for weddings. I went to the guy, "Abu Sami, I'd like to have a camera. It's not digital." And he said, "Go, you know, you're a 17 years old boy coming to play with me. No, go." So I said to him, "Well, I want a camera. I want to document what's happening." The man didn't believe what I'm telling him. I'm telling him house is demolished, bombing, F-16s, look at that. He just doesn't believe it. So he said to me, "Well, you want that? I give you this. And if you break it, you are having to sign on this paper that you will give me from your pocket money every day you go to school." I say, "Yeah, every day I bus from here." "Okay, all the stingy man." And then I said to him, "Sir, I take it." And then I first took the first photo of the bulldozer demolishing the house. The second photo, third photo almost cost me my life. I was almost shot. The shooting started. I don't know from anywhere. I don't know. Shovels of the bulldozers, taking the ruins of the houses, taking it up and throwing it all the way. It was not smart of me that I managed to escape. It was a matter of luck, I should admit. It was really difficult situations. I managed to get some photos. I went, I made him to develop them. 2-3 days later on, I got to see and to bring the photos. Some of these photos that I show are digital, and some that I used using the old camera from the old man. And from then I started on the website, and then I got on my blog and website requests from newspapers to write for them. I got requests from Dagens Nyheter in Sweden, which is the biggest Scandinavian newspaper, Morgenbladet in Norway, Aftonbladet in Norway, and then I got also from IPS news agents in Europe, New Statesman, The Guardian, The Independent, as well as The Washington Report on Middle East Affairs in Washington, D.C. Oh. Well, this lady is related to house demolitions. Actually, she's a neighbor as well. This was one of the first few photos that I took of her. I wish at some moment that her eyes could be like mirrors to show the Israeli bulldozers demolishing her house. I can assure you one thing. She has nothing to do with army, nothing to do with politics. In fact, she hates military, this lady. She cares about two things in her life. We tell her, "I'm Fathi," that's her name. "What do you like the best thing in life?" She said, "Orange and olive trees." At this moment, she was watching the Israeli bulldozer demolishing her house. Everything is destroyed. And in addition to that, her own son, Fathi, was killed. And most of her grandchildren were injured. I just want to get her thoughts, just to get a quote under this photo. And I said to her, "What do you want to say? What do you want to tell the Americans?" "Say, Americans? This is Americans. This is American bulldozer that is demolishing our hand. They have the power of the world behind them. There is nothing I can add."
Then the previous image showed some of the destruction, and you have so many pictures, Muhammad, that it's only possible to show a couple of them, but this really struck me. What are those?